How I Did It, the Business Post's Women in Leadership podcast.
Hello and welcome to How I Did It, the Business Post's Women in Leadership podcast series with myself, Nadine O'Regan. Here's a question for you. How do you become a leader? And here's another question. How do you become a leader when the odds have historically been stacked against you? In this series, we're going to be talking about leadership through talking to some great female leaders. The aim of these episodes is to inform, inspire, and hopefully offer very practical support and advice about how you can move forward in your path. To that end, if you have a careers question that you think one of our leaders might be able to advise on, please do get in touch so I can put the question to them directly, nadine@businesspost.ie, or you can get in touch via Twitter direct message, twitter.com/Nadine O'Regan. Now to our first guest. I am delighted to tell you that our first guest on the podcast is Anne O'Leary, Chief Executive of Vodafone Ireland. If you're involved or interested in business or leadership, you'll probably have seen or read about Anne O'Leary at some point. A natural leader, she has become one of Ireland's best-known faces in business. Raised in the Blackrock suburb of Cork City, Anne began her career as an office manager in Nixdorf Computer while studying marketing at night. She also worked later on at Reuters and the Golden Pages before moving to ESAT Telecom, where she became regional director. When in 2000 the company was bought by British Telecom, she stayed at BT as managing director, although it meant moving to Dublin, a tough accommodation for the Cork woman. In 2008, Anne O'Leary was headhunted by Vodafone, where in 2013 she became chief executive. In our conversation for this episode, we talk about the highs and lows of being a woman in business in what can sometimes still be a very male-dominated world. Anne talks about that, and she has plenty of advice for women too about how to grow and improve, as well as how to get promoted. She also has advice for bosses on how they can create better working structures for their employees. Put simply, she has a ton of insights to share, some really great points, and I very much enjoyed talking to her. So, without further ado, this is Anne O'Leary's How I Did It.
How I Did It, the Business Post's Women in Leadership podcast.
Anne O'Leary, Chief Executive of Vodafone Ireland, you are very welcome to How I Did It. How are you?
I'm great, Nadine. Lovely, and even better talking to you.
You're very kind.
Since we're all in lockdown, it's just lovely to connect with people.
We'll take the Zoom if we can have it, absolutely. Well, for the uninitiated, of course, this is a brand new podcast series, and How I Did It is both the story of how you, our guest, did it, and it being the word success, and it's also hopefully a guide for other women, women who are on their path towards achieving. And to talk, I think, initially, when people think of you, probably three words come to mind. Cork, triathlons, Vodafone. Can we start with Cork? When you were growing up, you were one of four kids, three brothers, and the impression I get is that you were raised kind of in the rough and tumble of the household, and maybe as the only girl, maybe you actually didn't see that great of a point of difference, because sometimes I think kids can be quite separated in terms of gender, but maybe you didn't have that.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Growing up with three brothers, I was surrounded by boys, even though my brothers do say that I spent a lot of time out of the house. So I was friendly with two particular girls who were only girls up the road. So spent a lot of time with them for my female girls company. But certainly in the house, you know, there was kind of no difference. We were all the same. And yeah, you know, you ate quickly, you grabbed your dinner because it would be eaten by the brothers. It was a fun, loving, kind of relaxed house, I would say. I would say a fairly normal, standard childhood, but of course, I don't know what to compare it to.
At that time, I always think it's interesting to sort of cast your mind back to, and not that, you know, we're all very young, let's just say we're very young, but around that time, maybe there were different ideas about, you know, what women could go on to do. I always remember, you know, saying that I was interested in the arts, for example, and it was always immediately said to me, well, you'll be a teacher. And you were told, your mother thought that you would become a nurse. Why did she think that?
I don't know. I think my mother thought nursing was a lovely vocation, and which it is. Mm. But I think it is a vocation. So, and I kind of because I didn't really have a clue. And I there wasn't, certainly in my house, you know, I think different friends had different experiences. I wanted to work and I wanted to be independent. I started babysitting, you know, in a local house from a young age, which was great. I had my own money. And then my father used, you know, back me up for my shopping and nice things. So I wanted to go to work. Mum thought nursing would be good, and she's right. But the day before the interview, I decided really nursing wasn't for me. And I think it was probably the right decision. Even though someone did say, well, you might be running the HSE by now or something. Maybe. I don't know. But that didn't happen. And I didn't do it. And I took a different course. But I certainly wasn't the person that sat there that said I was going to lead a business or be a CEO.
Well, actually, you became the chief executive of Vodafone Ireland after having been in the business for 5 years. And I wonder if you could take me back to that point where you made the leap from being a senior player in the organisation to assuming that role. Because even within the scope of your career, there would have been a sense that maybe somebody from exactly your area of experience mightn't have moved into the chief executive role. There was a feeling of... Is it fair to say a surprise or, you know, that expectations were that it might be a guy or that it might be you were the first Irish person there in the role? So, you know, it was and is a very big deal.
Yeah. And I often talked about that at the time. And so I had been head of the B2B division, and actually becoming chief executive of Vodafone, there had never been a B2B leader. Usually they were from the consumer business, the B2C. So that was unusual. There actually had been a woman, an American woman, at one stage. I didn't meet her there, so I wasn't the first woman, but I certainly was the first Irish person. So at the time when the opportunity came up and the role was available, you know, the assumption was it would be one of the international talent people that would come to Ireland to do a 3-year stint maybe and then move on to bigger or better things. Because Ireland was seen as a great training ground for international CEOs, which it is. We're English speaking. It's a wonderful country. It's very welcoming. So from a Vodafone perspective, a lot of the CEOs had come here and moved on. So but I was the only internal candidate being considered. I didn't know the other internal candidates. When you're in a huge organization with over 100,000 people working, you don't know who the competition is. You're not sure. But I certainly was in the running. But did I think I was going to get it? Not really. But I did describe it at the time. At the time, a lot of people said to me, are you mad? Why would you take the job? Are you not successful enough? And it's what we call benevolent bias. It's when people that care about you actually hold you back. And parents can do that with children, right, as well. They think they're minding them or caring them, but they're actually limiting their ambitions. So none of the people that said to me, you know, are you mad? Friends, people I worked with, 80% of the people I worked with said that. They said it because they cared for me, but they were actually holding me back. But at that time, I think the Lean In book was out, and it was about what you could do and how you need to seize opportunities. And I remember sitting up in bed one night and I said, Anne, you're 100 metres from the finish line. You've trained for the marathon. Think about it. And you're not going to go over it. Someone says to you, Nadine, don't bother finishing that marathon. You know, you've been training for your whole life for this role. And I said, I'm 100 metres. I'm going for it. And I'm going to go all in. I'm not going to listen to anything what anyone's. And I went all in. And when I got the phone call to say I got the job, I went, oh my God, what has just happened? And I remember going home, looking in the mirror, going, oh my God, I'm going to be found out. You know, this fake, this thing, I'm a fake or I'm a fraud or it's not going to work out. And I said, you know, I'm going to be found out. And it probably took me 2 or 3 years in the role, successfully in it, hitting all my KPIs and my metrics that are set for you to realise, no, you're not faking it anymore. You're doing it. You know, so, you know, they say fake it until you become it. And that's what I say to a lot of women now on roles. I say, you know, you're not faking it. It's men are the same. They go into the role, they're only 50% ready. And then you develop and you get better into the role and you learn and whatever. So I say to them, fake it up and you become it. And one day you'll wake up in the bed and you'll go, I haven't been fired.
So making it for you wasn't getting the role. It was knowing that you had succeeded in it. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, when I got it, it was a great achievement. And I remember announcing it internally. So I was the VBU director and I went to meet everyone to tell them first before the rest of the company. And I had about 150 people and they all started cheering and clapping. They were so delighted that Ireland, Vodafone Ireland, had the first Irish CEO, one of their own, that was going to look out for them and look out for the people of Ireland and deliver for them. And that was a great achievement, yes. But there were doubts. I had doubts about, am I going to be successful? Am I going to do this right? And of course, as the years went by and you have your performance reviews and you have the data and the independent assessment of your performance, and when people are saying, we are really happy and you have done a great job, do you suddenly go, no, I've become the CEO? There are some things as women that we need to do as well, and we need to be brave and courageous and make sure that we don't let people or invisible barriers or things hold us back.
Well, I want to talk about that because I think your story has been very well drawn through the media over the years, and the excitement and the passion that you have for the role has been very, very well depicted. But, you know, something that I know less about from you are moments in your life when you've experienced abject failure. And as we all know, like, failure is an opportunity as well to learn, let's face it. So could you take me back to a time of absolute disaster for you from a career perspective, and what you did to move on and get over it?
So, you know, the first thing I'd say is, you know, like everyone, I've had setbacks and things have not worked out for me. Now, what I would say about me is, you know, people have different ways of looking and dealing with setbacks. And I know it from mentoring and supporting people, you know, and you know, some people get really set back by them and it lives with them and they can find it hard to get over them and to move on. What I would say about me is I move on quickly, right? And I actually often forget about them, right? Because sometimes people would remind me of things. Do you remember in that meeting when you cried? And I'm looking at them going, no. You know what I mean? And I go, oh, do you remember that time? And I'm like, no. So something about my optimism or positivity or how I deal with setbacks to build me up and go, to make me more resilient. I think there's something in my character about that, which I think has helped me. And you know, when we talk about people building resilience and building grit, you know, you will have setbacks. It's how you deal and how you bounce back with. And look at various times, I remember over in London working in Reuters, and I went for a role and I didn't get it. And I remember crying about not getting that role. Yeah. And I can't remember what. I think I failed this test and that test, and they were all, there was a lot of tests at the time. And we now know that some people do better in tests than others. And I remember thinking it was the end of the world, but it wasn't the end of the world. I didn't get it. And I learned from it. I learned maybe not to do so many tests. You know, and there's been other times in organisations where I felt I was the best person for the role and I haven't got it. And I still feel I probably was the best person for the role. But there was other biases, like proximity bias, which is where people put people they're more comfortable with, that they trust, that they've worked with for longer. And usually in cases like that, it's male appointing other men. So women, because they don't have the network, whatever. So I would say there's many, Nadine, but I think I might have blocked a lot of them out in the back of my head. I haven't got jobs. You know, I feel I've been skipped over at different times. At different times, I've had to suck things up that maybe I don't agree with, or see things going on in organisations that I mightn't agree with. But you have to pick your battle to survive.
What are some strategies that you've learned that help you when it comes to trying to achieve your goals in that sense? So for example, if you dealt with something like proximity bias, or if you encountered sexism at a meeting, or simply you weren't able to get your desired result and you genuinely felt, for reasons that were highly accountable, that your goal is the correct goal, it is the direction that the company that you work for, or your own endeavor, that this is the way you should be going forward. How do you get what you want in that sense?
Yeah, look, you know, I definitely had an experience during my career where I hadn't got a role where I felt I should. And also that the many appointments that were being made, not only for me, but there was a gender bias and a proximity bias. And I made it very clear that that I believed that that was going on in a very professional way, backed with data. Yeah. And I think it was hard for the people not to agree with my point of view, because the facts were there. And of course, people have their reasons, and often people don't mean, they're not doing it to hurt you, or they have some other ulterior motive. Often some of these reasons can seem very rational. And actually, if you look at them on paper as well, the person that maybe got the job has the credentials to do the job and will probably do a fine job, right? But the fact is, you know, as I said, that are you sure that you've looked at all the options there? And have you, are there, you know, are there biases inherent in your decision making? Have you, were you willing to take the same risks on me as a woman as the man? Did I have to have every bit of the criteria while the other candidate didn't? The other candidate, by the way, was probably able to do the job fine. But have you been open in terms of how you should have looked at this and been really fair in terms of it? So I think, you know, what I would say, and I, you know, women often ask me, I think you do need to stand your ground. I think you need to think about how you go about it, though, how you say things, who you're saying them to. Some people are very rational, data driven people, you know. So if someone's like that, they're not going to be able to deal with emotions with you crying. Yeah. So you might have your cries somewhere else, and then you might, you know, figure out when you're going to do it. And also, you know, what I have done, I remember in that occasion, is how can we make sure it doesn't happen again? Not just for me, but for all the other women in the company. And I have seen where it did make people stand back and change. And maybe it didn't work for me that time. It did work for maybe other women. And I certainly feel my duty and the platform I have and the position I have, you know, does it, I don't know, I feel an onus to do not just right for me, but the next wave of women that are coming along, both in Vodafone and externally.
And on that front, as a general rule of thumb, do you believe in quotas or in positive discrimination in order to correct historical or contemporary subconscious bias?
Yes. And the reason is, if it's not happening naturally or organically, there's a problem. And unfortunately, if you've never experienced something, sometimes you can't understand it. OK, so a lot of people, when it comes to gender, they don't think it's a problem because they've never had any biases against them. They also think they have all the policies and everything in place and that it's fair and equitable because they don't see the barriers that are there. OK, but the fact is, if boards or organisations at this stage don't have 30% women, there's something wrong when 50-50 of the population is out there. Right. And the fact is, if they haven't reached it, they need a target and they need a quota, because sometimes that's what people motivate them. That's what they understand. So if you think of me or most business people, you have targets at the end of the year: revenue, profitability, cash flow, net promoter score, you know, maybe churn, people that leave you. Diversity and inclusion is another one. Yeah. And if you have a metric, you know, for the next 5 years, you'll work towards it. You'll intervene. If your revenue isn't growing at 3% a year, you do something about it. If your diversity and inclusion stat is still stuck at 20, you've only 20% female. You can't just keep saying, well, I can't do anything about it. No, you do something about it. How do I get it to 30? What are the things I need to put in, the processes, the procedures, the structures to make sure that I reach that goal? And unfortunately, some people, until they do it, they don't understand it's right. And like I have heard, and men have said to me, and you know, this diversity and inclusion thing, I didn't understand it until I had a totally diverse management team. How we dealt with problems, how we dealt in crisis, the quality of the discussion. Yeah. So they didn't know what they were missing until it happened. So, you know, I understand that people aren't certain often intentional in it. But in this day and age now, it, you know, for me, I have 54% female in my leadership team in Vodafone, overall people managers. And that's because I've been working on it since I joined the company 12 years ago, but as CEO in the last 8 years. And it's about succession planning, and it's a, so that there are women ready for roles that are qualified, and that we take the same risk on them as we do on men. But and this isn't something that's a short-term thing. It's a systemic thing that you need to be watching on, just like you look at profitability, revenue growth or net promoter score.
What is a lesson that you've learned, particularly through your career, in relation to leadership?
I think it's a very complex area. And I learn all the time about it. But leadership, to me, ultimately is about creating followership. And it's very hard to do. Yeah. And, you know, people have, you know, a lot of skills. They can be very smart, huge IQ, but little EQ, then they're not going to get the followership. And trying to get that mix of IQ, smarts and EQ, where you can really, I call it the heart and soul of your organization. And it's just very hard to explain. But leadership, you know, it's when you create an environment where you can attract amazing talent and people, you can empower them and you trust them for them to be their best and for them to reach their full potential. And you're creating psychological safety for them to give their opinions, where you're creating an environment where, you know, learning, it's about learning for everyone, not having the answers, humility. And these are, you know, I say all these words, right? But the depth of what they mean is huge. And, you know, was I the same leader when I first became a manager at 28? No, it was probably tell them what to do. And, you know, they execute whatever. While now, and at my level, you know, I don't have all the answers because the competitive landscape is changing so much. The consumer is changing so much. The world we live in. So actually having everyone's opinions and input on the decisions we make is absolutely key. And whether that's male, female, young, old, introvert, extrovert, a legal opinion or, a product opinion or engineering. So I think it's an leadership is ongoing. You have to constantly work and get 360 feedback on knowing your strengths, the self-awareness of what you're good at and where your development needs are and how you can really work at that.
One of the things that women traditionally have been quite bad at is negotiating upwards, whether for promotion or for salary. I presume you've both been the person walking into the room to look for the rise, and you've been the person for whom other people have walked into the room and had that conversation with. So how do you recommend women approach that subject?
Yeah, look, I think it's fair enough. I think probably earlier on in my career, I was just delighted to have a job. I certainly wasn't going, what's he on compared to me? Yeah. You know, just really appreciating the salary I got and the reward I got. Now I think people are much more aware of, am I being paid the same and fairly for the same role as my male colleagues, which I think is right. And my experience would be of leading men and women is often men would negotiate more or harder or have higher expectations. Yeah. So I think it's just fair enough for women now to question, and I'd be much more questioning myself on, am I paid the same as my other male CEOs in Vodafone? And I want to ensure I am. And we've done our own gender pay gap in Vodafone Ireland, and it's actually minus 4% towards women because we have 54% females. So and that's because we have so many females in senior roles, which is great. But I think just females just reflecting on the work they do, the role they do, and the value that they receive for that job, and to ensure that they are just questioning it. You know, where should I be? You know, where am I going? Am I being paid fairly or whatever? And, you know, asking, the worst thing you're going to get is a no, but at least you've asked. And, you know, if you think about it, if I've got, you know, my budget of 2 or 4%, say I've got 50,000 in my budget for salary increases. Unfortunately, sometimes, you know, the structures and the way you do it and whatever, but sometimes it often is the person that says, well, I feel I should be paid more, or I need the money more. We all have these biases and we do things. And you might say, well, Mary there is very happy to have a job and it's very happy to be paid. Now, obviously, in a place like Vodafone, you have structure. You look at pay scales. We look at all that. But in smaller companies, often they don't. Yeah. So we're always checking to make sure that the females are getting the share allocations, performance reviews, promotions, and, you know, that the structure, that's making sure structures and processes are in place, that biases aren't there. But yes, I would encourage people just to reflect, question, you know, ask nicely, where do I fit? You know, I think it's a fair question. And often men feel quite entitled to question, and they're probably right, and we should do it more.
When you were progressing through your career and you were going up and up the ladder, and you continue to learn, you've studied at some amazing colleges, you know, Harvard, and starting in Skerries and going the whole way forward and up all the time. But I wonder if there were moments when you felt a little bit like, you know, you were one woman, sometimes in a room of, you know, 80 men, and you felt like that you could only be the one woman, that there was only room for one woman, because I think women often feel that when they get a role, they kind of think they have to pull the ladder up after them, because there's a sense that there's a quota for the woman and that quota is one. So do you have to, or have you had to make a concerted effort in your own personal thinking to not be biased against other women?
Yeah. So what I would say on that is I am the complete opposite. My role has always been to support other women and to send the lift down. And I'll give you an example. And it was probably when I joined Vodafone 13 years ago, I set up the Women's Network. I just turned 40. And I remember saying it to a female leader at the time. And I said, I'm setting up the Women's Network. And she said, why? There was no one there to help us. And I remember being completely startled by that comment. And I said, you're right. There was nobody there to help me, but that doesn't make it right. And I am going to do all I can to help every other woman now, from now on. And when the Women's Network, it was all about bringing women together, me talking about the biases that happened to me, the mistakes I made, you know, how that they could share how they were feeling and that it was okay to feel like that. Yeah. And then we started bringing in men and that, you know, it's developed. But I think you're right. I think maybe there have been some women, and I've heard stories about that, where it's about, you know, they're in that men's club now and there's not enough room for other women, or let's protect that. But I would say I am completely the opposite. And I have, you know, that's why I have 54% females in leadership roles in Vodafone, because a lot of the women that I have brought in have got on to senior roles in Vodafone Ireland, but also in Vodafone Group. There's a load of Irish people. So I have, and I've also taken women from Vodafone Group all over the world. My consumer director is Hungarian. She's female. I took in a Romanian CTO, you know. So I, and also what's the other part of that is when I became CEO 8 years ago, a female leader said to me, who's older than me, I was senior and I didn't do enough for women when I had the power and platform to do. So don't you do that. And I would probably say, I will look back and I feel now that my biggest achievement in Vodafone Ireland as CEO has been my voice for women, not only within the Vodafone group, but also externally. I expect other women to do the same and I work with other women to do that.
Is there someone that you could point to who would have been maybe a mentor to you, who would have supported you on your career? Because again, you know, going back to a few decades ago, like it was still seen, I think, that ambition could be something of a dirty word for women, for young women. So to move past some of those invisible barriers was very, very difficult. So is there someone that you'd point to and say, look, that this person was important?
Well, what I would say is I've had mentors and sponsors. So the mentors are you go to for advice. Yeah. And most of them would have been male because it was nearly all men I worked with. And they were amazingly supportive and, you know, you can do it. You know, you're better than you think. You know, you're fabulous. And actually, there's one, Niall Welsh, Welsh and Company. He was he had a business near us and did some work with me when I was in ESAT Telecom. And he used to always just say, you know, you can do it. It was just wonderful. It was. And then I was what I call sponsors, or sponsors are people when I worked in different companies that when I wasn't in the room, they said, give her the job. And most of them were men. And that's what you need. So you need people to do that. And in Vodafone, Vittoria Calau was my sponsor. He was the guy, and he's just left. He's the CEO of Vodafone Group. He was the guy in the room said, I want to give her the job. I've looked, she can do the job. Give her the job. So all the 50% of naysayers saying, oh, I don't know if it's a woman, or she's not fully rounded, or she's VBU, she's only done B2B, she's, you know, she's Irish, maybe we don't, you know. So I'm sure there was a load of people questioning the decision. And then there were the people who said, give her the chance, promote her, give her more, do that. And I'm very grateful for them. You know, and I'm still very fond of them and in touch with most of them.
Well, I might bring you now to a question from a person who got in touch with me over direct message on Twitter to ask a question in relation to leadership. And it's from Rachel. And what she says is, my question for your leader is, how do I get people to listen to me? I feel like when I contribute in meetings, people don't pay me the same attention they pay to others. I don't know if it's that I lack gravitas, but I can feel that I'm being given short shrift. Are there active things I can do to commandeer a room?
Yeah. So, you know, the first thing is, I think I had the same. I remember somebody said they were doing some team effectiveness years ago and they said, you keep repeating yourself. And I realized I kept repeating myself because nobody acknowledged what I was saying and I felt nobody was listening to me, which is interesting. So I think the first thing, if that is something, I think is to ask the people. So I don't think women or people ask, can I just ask you, what am I like in a meeting? Or when I speak, what do you hear? Or you know, I sometimes think people don't listen to me. And some women say, I made a point, and then someone makes the same point, and I made it earlier, right? So I think what we often don't do is ask people how they perceive us. And that could be men or women. I'm just in a meeting, Nadine, and what was I like this morning? Because it could be somebody could say anything. I can't understand your accent because you're from Cork, or you speak too quietly, or, you know, whatever. It could be many things, right? Or the other thing is, and I've heard this tip, you could say to someone, no, I did hear you. They'd say, and then somebody said, I thought it was a very good point. And I said, well, the next time in a meeting I make a point, would you acknowledge my point? And build on it and say, Anne, that was a very good point. I hear you. And I'd like to build on it. And that is something I've used with women who sometimes feel, I'm being missed or whatever. Can you help me? And it changes the whole dynamic of the meeting. So, and there can be things, you know, that people might say, it was some people said, you speak too fast, and blah, 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 you make 5 points instead of one. Yeah. So I'd say, okay, speak a little slower, maybe make 1 point at a time. So they are kind of the tips, but don't be afraid to ask people, what am I like in meetings? What could I do at a one-on-one? Yeah. And then if they say things like, no, I think you make great points. Well, would you mind acknowledging it? Because it'd be good for my confidence.
Oh, wow. It's a great tactic. It's, yeah. Brilliant.
It works wonderfully.
Yeah. Well, tell me this. You are an amazing athlete in combination with everything else. Triathlon, swimming, you're off in the sea, you're putting the rest of us to shame. And one of the things that I struggle to understand is how you combine such a huge job with the time that it takes to actually be in the outdoors and commit to that kind of athleticism. So how does it work for you?
I was a big triathlete, but it's a while ago. And I did train very hard and compete in triathlons like every weekend. I think I was nuts. I used to go all around the country. I'd be down in Skibbereen and then I might be in Clare, and then I might go to Donegal, and I'd do a half Ironman at the start of the summer, a half Ironman at the end. And I did that and I enjoyed it. But that is probably 10 years ago. Okay.
I still see all those pictures of you in the sea. There's always snaps. You're always...
No, that's true. But jumping in the sea like for 5 minutes is a bit different than, you know, competing in a half Ironman. So what I would say is I was a swimmer as a kid. So I love the sea and I love the water. And I have a place in West Cork. And then I started running and then I bike. But for me, it's about my mental and physical well-being now. OK, so I could be stuck on calls from 9 till 7 or 7:30 every day of the week. You know, that's not good. So what I know, I'm in much better form when I do some exercise. So, for example, in lockdown now, every second day I run 6K because that only takes me 30 to 35 minutes. I know I have no excuse not to do that. OK, I mightn't be able to walk for 2 hours. Right. But I can get up at 7:30 and run for 35 minutes, come back, jump in the shower, and I'm at my Zoom all day. The sea is just below me in Sea Point. On a Saturday, I'll run. I jump in the sea. It's great. I have access to the sea. And on a Sunday, I get on my bike and I go off on my mountain bike if it's snowy or anything. And it's just to get outdoors, to get those endorphins going, and just to feel good. And to feel good because I lead a huge company. I'm dealing with, I mean, I don't know what I could be hit with every day. You have people that might need help or support. You know, you have issues in the business, and I need to be at my best. And I know Anne O'Leary is at her best when she does outdoor physical exercises. And every second day now I do yoga to stretch. So I just make the time for it. So I don't clean my house. Okay. So, you know, I say to people, so exercise and my work and my family and my friends are important. Some people like to clean the house on a Saturday from 9 to 5. My house would fall down. I don't care. I'll eat anything my husband has to cook because I don't care. I love food, but I'm not going to be cooking all night. So I've made those decisions about what makes me work better.
I won't keep you too much longer, Anne. I'm very grateful for the time. But I wanted just to conclude maybe by talking a little bit about the current work environment that we're in and that we're really still not going to be getting out of anytime soon, realistically. You've spoken before about the culture of presenteeism at work and how it can be a real issue where people were checking in physically, but not necessarily mentally, and that this was seen as the thing, that this meant that you were at work. Whereas actually sometimes you could possibly be far more useful if you were contributing with your mind and your energies, as opposed to just plonking yourself in the desk. Now, COVID-19 has put that to the test in a huge way, because most of us are working from home. So could you tell me a little bit about your thoughts on the culture of work that we're in now and maybe the direction of travel maybe for us as we go forward and what we've learned from this experience of the pandemic?
So look, I think there's been huge benefits for all of us, and certainly in Vodafone, we're looking at what we've learned that's been positive and how we can continue post-COVID. And I suppose one of the learnings is that there are a lot of meetings and tasks and things that can be done over Microsoft Teams and Zoom remotely. And it's really efficient. Rather than spending an hour or 2 hours travelling somewhere and all the lost time and whatever the impact on family life or the planet or traffic congestion, so many things. So certainly we've learned that in Vodafone, and going forward, you know, we look at it 60-40, which will be 40% of the week in the office. So 2 days in the office and 3 days working remotely. And working remotely can work from home or maybe a hub like the Ludgate and Skibbereen or wherever that suits you. And that will be our new model. And we think that is a model that will work very effectively for our business, will attract more talent, will bring more people into the workplace, will suit a lot more people. And also, you know, what we have learned, though, that being together, what is the reason to come to the office? The reason may be for the social interaction, just to meet people, to share ideas, to collaborate, maybe to brainstorm, to innovate, to maybe to have those conversations that just don't work over Zoom or Teams. We know that some people are struggling with their mental health. They don't like being like me. I'm in my attic at home. I prefer to spend some time meeting people. I'm an extrovert. I get energy from other people. But do I need to go back 5 days a week? Absolutely not. Two days a week are absolutely fine. So we're going to experiment and learn fast in terms of how that work will work for people within their own teams, but also how they work cross-functionally, because it's not just about me working within my team. There's all these benefits of working cross teams and the learnings from that. So I think the important thing is we don't want to go back to the old way where people got promoted because of the proximity bias, which is presenteeism. I see John or Mary 5 days a week, so I think I'll just give them the job rather than, Joe and Alice, who I only see 2 days a week. So we need to make sure, again, that we make sure there's no biases, that it's fair, that we have processes and structures in place, that people can reach their full potential, and that everybody has equal opportunities to get promoted.
Anne, thank you so much for joining us on How I Did It. And I want to ask one final question, which is, what is next for you? You are ambitious. You like an adventure. So can you tell me what you have your sights set on next?
Well, at the moment, I've just gone on the Green Core board. So that's exciting. And that's a FTSE company, and I've never been on one before. So I'm looking forward to learning about that. I've also been put on the Vodacom board, which is South Africa. So it's all learning about Africa and emerging markets and fintech. So looking forward to that. And I'm also going to start a coaching course in UCD in March. What it is it just, so it's leadership, it's management, but we call it coaching. And it just puts more structure around how you coach and frameworks about how you do that. So I'm going to do that and hopefully get a qualification in it, which I think will help me, be more maybe structured in my leadership, whether that's from a board perspective or a CEO perspective. But for me, again, you know, I just want to continue to learn and develop. And I'm open to all different opportunities that come my way.
Well, Anne O'Leary, Chief Executive of Vodafone Ireland, thank you so much for joining us on How I Did It, and the very best of luck with everything that's to come for you in the future.
Thank you, Nadine. Delighted to talk to you.
How I Did It, the Business Post's Women in Leadership podcast.
And my thanks once again to Anne O'Leary, Chief Executive of Vodafone Ireland, for being my guest on the first episode of How I Did It, the Business Post's Women in Leadership podcast. Coming up on the podcast next week.
in Leinster House on my first day in the Dáil in March 2016. There was a lot of jubilation at the time. So many women have been elected. It's the most women ever in the history, you know, of general elections. But when I sat in the Dáil that day, I looked around me and I was drowning in a sea of suits.
That's Catherine Martin, Minister for Tourism, Culture, Arts, Gaeltacht, Sport and Media. She'll be joining us next week on the podcast to talk about her life, career and her advice for people who are considering going into politics. I really enjoyed talking to her and I think you will find the episode very interesting. So join us next Sunday for the new How I Did It. And remember, you can find all our episodes going forward on the Business Post website, businesspost.ie/podcast. And you can also find us via Spotify, iTunes and other podcast providers. And if you're on those podcast providers, do consider hitting that subscribe button so you'll be auto-notified when the next episode appears. Also, if you have any questions for our leaders on upcoming episodes, maybe about your own career or ways that you could improve where you're at the moment, please do get in touch with me over direct message on Twitter. That's twitter.com/Nadine O'Regan, N-A-D-I-N-E-O-R-E-G-A-N. Or you can drop me an email, nadine@businesspost.ie. Right. Thank you so much for listening. Till the next time, this is Nadine O'Regan signing off. Do take care.
How I Did It. The Business Post's Women in Leadership Podcast.